You're about to listen to a download from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome to IPM, the programme that starts with its listeners. On PM this week, a listener got in touch with an experience we don't often hear people talk about.
I was very aware of the way that I was feeling was wrong. At the same time, aware of the fact that I didn't feel I could do anything about that. You have to keep everything within yourself and not show anybody who you really are, because you've got this dirty, dark secret.
He's talking about his sexual feelings towards children. He goes on in the interview to say that he's never acted on these feelings, but felt he needed help. He went to his GP, who put him in touch with support organisations, and he also says that the GP reported him to the police. Another listener, Juliet Grayson, heard the interview, and she contacted us because she speaks to people like him several times a week. But unlike the GP, she hasn't reported any of them. Juliet works as a psychotherapist and is co-founder of STOPSO. It stands for Specialist Treatment Organisation for the Prevention of Sexual Offending. It trains private practice therapists around the UK to work with people who seek help with, for want of a better word, inappropriate sexual urges. The people who get in touch with her organisation do so voluntarily and in confidence. It means that many of their clients may be unknown to the authorities, and as private therapists, they have no duty to report them as they're bound by the patient confidentiality agreement. This differs from anyone working in the public service, like the GP who helped the man you just heard. If you work for the NHS or at a school or the police or social services, you're under a duty to report someone if you suspect a child is suffering or at risk of harm. At the moment, that duty comes from your employment contract rather than UK law. But in recent years, there's been a call for a change in the law, making it illegal for anyone not to report suspected abuse. Juliet is concerned that this will apply to private therapists as well as those working in the public sector. She believes this would be a mistake. She agreed to tell us why, but first I asked her about her work as a therapist.
Funnily enough, I used to teach horse riding. I used to teach horse riding in Richmond Park, and I used to ride a bicycle and lead the horse. That's how I first started teaching horse riding. And people would come at the same time every week. And it was a little bit like going to the hairdressers. They'd talk to me. And someone said to me, you know, you're really good at this. You're really good at listening, and you ought to do this professionally. And over the years, I heard the most incredible stories of someone whose husband was knocked over by a bus, and it turned out he was wearing stockings under his suit, and she hadn't known that he dressed in that way. And one day I just thought, well, actually, I should go and train in this. And that was the beginning of my career as working as a counsellor, and I've done a number of different trainings now over the years.
And that's quite a shift from what you're doing now. Why did you decide to work with sex offenders?
I've become aware over the years of people who have needed help with acting out in a sexually inappropriate way and just haven't known where to turn to. And the importance of them having somewhere to go that's going to be a safe space where they can talk about it, because there are a lot of therapists who actually don't want to do this kind of work. And I've also heard some really bad stories about people who've gone asking for help and then either found themselves being judged or being turned away inappropriately. And so a group of colleagues and I got together and we said, really, we need to do something so that people can have somewhere that they will know that the therapist is trained to work with them and also willing to listen to that kind of issue so that they know they're not going to get rejected or turned away.
And so roughly, how many clients do you have that are sex offenders?
Personally, at the moment, I have about 5, and that's about the most that I take on at any individual time. And the organisation that we've set up, STOPSO, in the last 2 years, we've had over 100 people making contact with us, asking for help.
What do they say when they come to you and ask for help?
We get people talking about how desperate they are. So I've got one here. Let me just read this to you. So a chap who contacted us and saying that he's looking at child pornography, and he said, I'm under no illusions as to the rights and wrongs of my actions. I fully understand that I've done wrong, and I'm prepared, although really scared, to accept the consequences. I'm seeking a therapist to help me understand how I began this behaviour and to find help to prevent me from relapsing into it in the future.
They're coming to you voluntarily.
They're asking for help. They're proactively seeking something to help them stop. There is a group of sex offenders who are acting out and don't want to change, but there are an awful lot of them who are ashamed and really, really want help to be able to stop doing it. And that's where we want to make interventions with the people who are committed to stopping, who may or may not have come to the attention of the police. So sometimes they've been arrested or caught for it. About a third of the people who contact us haven't yet come to the attention of the police. So we're catching them upstream before they're committing an offence or in the very early stages of their offending.
And are you able to help them?
Yes. I got an email yesterday from a man who said, "I can't tell you how grateful I am for the help you've given me over the past 18 months. My desire to act out hasn't gone away, but I now recognise it as an impulse and it's just a feeling and I no longer feel I have to act on it." The closest comparison is that it's like wanting a cigarette. I now know how to acknowledge that feeling and then it settles, and over time it gets less and less. And my relationship with my wife has improved, my life has turned around, and without you that wouldn't have happened.
So you have evidence that managing this kind of behaviour is possible?
Yes, absolutely. There are many people who are non-offending paedophiles, so they have an interest in children. It's their predominant sexual attraction is towards children. But they don't have to become a child molester. Just because you're a paedophile and have the attraction doesn't mean that you need to act out in the world and do anything about it. And there are a large group of non-offending paedophiles who have a primary interest in children but are not becoming child molesters and doing anything about it. And the research shows that generally there's between a 27% reduction or a 42% reduction in reoffending if people are getting therapy.
And what do you think it is that really works with what you're doing?
It's tailor-made to each individual. Look at their behaviour, their fantasies, work with issues of self-esteem, accepting responsibility for what it is that they're doing, challenging denial and challenging any minimising that they might be doing.
It sounds like you're approaching this with a great degree of empathy. Does it repulse you at times in terms of what you're hearing?
There are times when I have to really take a deep breath because it's not comfortable to hear what I'm hearing. But if we're going to stay in the safe territory of only hearing the kinds of things that you want to hear, we're not going to be able to help these people.
Have any of the people that you work with committed an offence against a child?
I have worked with people who've been through the criminal justice system and have come out and are asking for help because they have historically committed offences with children. And they've served their time in prison and they've stopped and they want to stay stopped and they're asking for help with that.
If somebody came to you who had committed an offence, would you report them?
If they've committed a sexual offence, depending on what the offence is, then I may not. If someone is flashing and I really think that they're trying to stop that, then I might continue to work with them without reporting it. If someone came to me who I felt was at risk of abusing a child or had committed child abuse, then of course I would report that, because ethically I would have a responsibility to do that. But the interesting thing is that as a therapist in private practice, I have no legal responsibility to report a sexual offence. That gives me leeway to make a decision. And the place where it gets difficult is the grey area of child pornography. I'm under no illusions that someone looking at child pornography, there's a child who's been harmed. But if someone comes to me who says they've been looking and they'd stopped, but they were tempted, would I work with him? It's a very interesting question. In all honesty, probably I would work with him if I was clear that no children were at risk of being harmed currently and he has stopped looking at child pornography, then yes, I would work with him. I have worked with people who are stopping and they say to me, "I had a lapse last week and I won't report them, I'll keep working with them." I have a letter from the Home Office confirming that there's no specific requirement for a therapist in private practice to disclose this information to the authorities under the Protection of Children Act 1978.
And you contacted the Home Office for that clarity?
Yeah.
You may not have a legal responsibility, but you may have a moral duty to.
Yes, of course we have a moral duty to. And that's where it gets really difficult, and therapists need to make their own decision about that. STOPSO would recommend that anyone who's an actual case of child abuse where a child's going to get hurt, then yes, that should be reported, and there's no question about that. My primary aim is to stop sex offenders. And if I report too readily, the risk is that they're not going to come for therapy.
But aren't you taking a huge risk by not reporting?
Well, I would report child abuse. And I would report if I know someone is having any contact hands-on offending.
There are calls for mandatory reporting to be brought into UK law to make it a legal offence not to report if you think a child may be at risk. How would that affect you?
I think that would be very worrying if they included therapists in that, because the people who are coming forward for help would be too scared to do so.
But maybe we need to give people the courage to report. And if they can do so in the knowledge that it'll be properly investigated and definitely won't turn into a witch hunt, cases like Jimmy Savile will be much less likely to happen.
I think reporting is really important and we need people to come forward and report. But if we include therapists in that, then we're going to restrict people coming forward for help. And I'm very concerned that then sexual offending is going to go more underground and become more of a problem. The youngest perpetrator that has come our way is a 5.5-year-old boy, and he was brought up by a paedophile until he was 2.5, and he is acting out with his classmates at school, and we were asked to find a therapist to help him. So we're talking about people the whole age spectrum,
five and a half.
Giving these people help is a crime prevention issue. The aim is to stop victims becoming victims, to reduce crime, to break the cycle of abuse. That 5.5-year-old boy clearly was abused himself, and we need to break that cycle. And I really think it's important that we as a society make sure that this is available in the community for anybody who wants it.
Our listener, Juliet Grayson. If you want to know more about the support organisations or would like advice, you can contact the Radio 4 Action Line website or call to hear recorded information on 0800 044 044. That's 0800 044 044. The lines are open 24 hours and free from a landline, but mobile operators will charge you. Your sentences of news this week are read by a man you usually hear early on Sunday mornings. It's Your News with Radio 4's Edward Sturton.
My son gave me a wonderful present. It's a medieval bronze thimble which he dug up. Whenever I put it on, I try to imagine who was the last person to wear it and what he or she was sewing. My cat is dying and my heart is breaking. My mum cooperated with a smiley selfie with me for the first time since she went into a care home last year. At my husband's funeral, my brother's wreath was a box of vegetables. We're now eating them and remembering what a keen gardener he was when he was younger and fit. My mother raged, thumped, punched and kicked me. She has dementia. I'm going to hear 3 operas in 4 days, 2 Mozarts and a Verdi. They've given me a smartphone, which isn't as smart as it thinks it is, but it's still a bit smarter than me. Wife in lockdown with dog after approximately 3-foot snake seen climbing into creeper. A man I went out with 31 years ago called to tell me a man I went out with 32 years ago has died. After 33 years working in the same inner city comprehensive, I'm looking forward to the end of my teaching career. To all the students I've learned from, thank you.
Edward Sturton. I'll be back next week with Eddie. And if you'd like to send us a sentence of news about your week, single sentence, email us anytime you like, ipm@bbc.co.uk.